to DR Oshkosh and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. An arrest in a stunning shooting death of a Los Angeles Catholic bishop this weekend, Auxiliary Bishop David O'Connell. They've arrested Carlos Medina. The L.A. County Sheriff Robert Luna says
detectives recovered two firearms and other evidence possibly linking Medina to the crime.
President Biden is overnighting in Warsaw ahead of meetings with NATO leaders Tuesday. After an unannounced visit to Ukraine's capital, Russian President Putin will address his nation tomorrow. Here's ABC's Patrick Reval in Ukraine.
I think the belief is that it will likely be a very hawkish speech. It will likely be an attempt to rally Russians for a long war, which is what all signs point to try and encourage Russians to really lean into this war and join up and join those mobilization efforts that the Kremlin is also pushing.
14 people hurt, one in critical condition, after an explosion at a brass and bronze factory in Oakwood Village near Cleveland, Ohio. This is ABC News. There was a deadly alligator attack today in Florida.
The 85-year-old in Fort Pierce was out walking her dog when an alligator jumped out of a lake and attacked. Witnesses say the woman was bitten while trying to wrestle her dog away from the 10-foot-long alligator. Trappers later found the reptile at the bottom of that lake, later pulling it out. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission says its thoughts and deepest sympathies are with the family and friends of the victim. Mike Dubusky, ABC News.
14 people hurt after two explosions shattered a brass and bronze manufacturing plant. Happened in the Cleveland suburb of Oakwood Village. Joe Sarconi was across the street when the explosions hit.
Next thing you know, boom! I looked over and it was just boom, and then I got a little bit of footage on my phone, but I don't know how good it is. Ridiculous.
The TSA saying it's intercepted more than 6,500 guns at airport checkpoints across the country last year. Andy Field, ABC News.
Local radio for your community. Civic Media broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin.
Hey, Fox Valley, if you've got a favorite supper club, we're your station. Civic Media.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A memorial service is in the works for former University of Wisconsin-Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank. During her time at the UW, she created full-ride scholarships for low-income students from Wisconsin and led the effort to enroll more out-of-state students. She died Friday from pancreatic cancer. Blank was 67. Republican lawmakers plan to craft their own state budget rather than work off the one Governor Evers proposed last week. They concede they'll have to increase spending, but will try to keep it lower than what the governor's proposing.
24% seems like a pretty excessive amount of spending. My guess is that in the end, we're not going to end up anywhere close to a 24% increase in spending.
That's Senator Howard Markline of Spring Green. He was on WISN-TV's Upfront program Sunday. In sports, Giannis Antetokounmpo is in New York to get his injured right wrist looked at. He hurt it last Thursday night. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
The Devil's Advocates.
Today, I made a mental note. It was 1:09 Central Time when I found out Ron Johnson was a conspirator in a coup, a traitor to the Constitution, and Ron's been something of an apologist. You know, they seem real friendly. Well, maybe to you, Ron, because you were on the inside of the coup, and I've never made that accusation prior to today. So let's play it for the people.
This staffer stated that Senator Johnson wished to hand-deliver the fake electors' votes from Michigan and Wisconsin.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Go by any construction site in Wisconsin. You're going to see a lot of Michael's trucks. Since 2014, they've had more than $1 billion worth of contracts with the state government.
A large part of those coming with Foxconn without any results in that area.
Do we want a governor who might be giving his brothers the contract? I think he needs to answer that before the election.
We'll just kick that one down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But of course, Michael's corporation would get to build that said bridge.
Listen Monday through Friday from 2 to 3. It's Dueling Tangents.
My early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
But it gave my mom and me more time to plan together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you prevent wildfires.
Dude, I've got this. I've been camping since I was 5 years old.
But I am a camping influencer.
You know what? I'll bet you $5. Assistant Smokey, what is the best way to put out a campfire?
To put out a campfire, drown with water, stir, drown again, then make sure the fire is out cold by feeling with the back of your hand.
Wait, really?
I'll take the $5.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. Civic Media.
At thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. So we're watching an explosion in Bedford, Ohio, southeast of Cleveland. A massive explosion. 14, as of now, 14 casualties reported. One fatality, potentially more. If you look at the images that are coming out, the videos that are coming out of this explosion, it can be seen for miles away. And while no one knows exactly what caused the explosion, lots of speculation from dust to the tanks of fuel to I even had one person say, there's this nefarious plot to take on manufacturing. And, the thing is there's no nefarious plot to destroy the country. There's no crazy right-wing insanity going on right now. There's no end of times. There's none of that. There's none of that happening in this moment. What this is this is what, years of deregulation has brought us. I mean, all of these horrible, the train derailments, the fires, the explosions, again, not part of some nefarious plot or end time scenario. It's what happens when you unleash radical self-interest for corporations. It's what happens when you deregulate. It's what happens when there's no oversight. It's pretty simple to me. And the fact that Ohio is front and center right now is, well, a big part of this. Massive explosion today. We don't know the cause of it, but I got to tell you, I've seen these stories time and time again. We were in Texas a number of years back when there was a massive explosion there. And it pointed out the sad reality that, who knew that you could put ammonium nitrate in wooden containers in a wooden shed in the hot summer sun without any sprinkler systems or any of that. Who knows if someone lit that on fire that it would explode if you didn't have any fire retardation program to make sure that it stops. Who knew regulation? And when And this is the interesting part. When the Attorney General was asked about it, they said,
If you wanted to know, you could have just gone and asked. You know, the neighbors could have just gone and knocked on the building's door and said, "Hey, we'd like to inspect your facility there." Yeah, good luck on that. Now, the weird thing is, over the weekend, not more than several miles from where this explosion that we're watching right now happened, you had another explosion. They're saying that was a failed boiler. It was heard miles around at the Warren Coke plant, of ArcelorMittal out there in Warren, Ohio. It was Trumbull County. Fortunately, no lives lost, no damage to human life. But again, another explosion. Who knows what that could have been? And you look at what happened in East Palestine. Comes back to, there's no cop on the beat. And I know I've been seeing all this conspiracy, and there's lots, oh my goodness, the conspiracy theories that are bubbling up around, because all of this stuff, people are paying attention to it now. Not new, mind you. This is stuff we've been talking about on this program for years. Not new, but the conspiracies are now jumping on. And it's, this nefarious plot by Biden, especially. When the reality is this is what Republican laissez-faire economics gets you. This is where, this idea that corporations are going to police themselves. Not so much. Today, we also found out that Norfolk Southern, their CEO, Alan Shaw, who, remember, the guy who pockets about $4.3 million a year salary, they're going to go and they have offered $1,000 to everyone in the 44413 zip code. And I went and looked this up. There are, according to the Googles, 7,262 people in that zip code, which means it's going to be about $7.6 million, or about one and a half times what Mr. Shaw puts in his pocket. So you go, well, that's not really a penalty. Now, they say that there's no NDAs, because we care. And what this really is this is a self-imposed penalty. This is brilliant. This is masterful public relations, getting out ahead of it. Oh, we're partners together. This is what I was saying, last week. What the right is doing masterfully and what Republican legislators are doing is they're taking all the heat off of Norfolk Southern, putting it on the back of Buttigieg and Biden, because there's already a disdain on the right for them. Anyway, so this is a perfect place. By moving this over, saying, oh, well, it's look at how well the company's taking care of you. They're giving you $1,000. How great is that? Considering the poverty rate in that county really high, $1,000 seems like a lot of money. Now, when you stop and you think about it, and walk with me, if you will, the reality that this is a company that profited $4.8 billion, pure profit in their pocket, after everything was said and done, $4.8 billion profit. They had a stock buyback program last year, $4.23 billion. Billion with a B. Not the million with an M, billion with a B. They're offering those people $7.6 million. What percentage of that is the profits? It is literally a drop in the bucket. Now, you go, well, the $4.23 billion stock buyback program. What that tells me, they're admitting we have no useful use for this money. Understand? In August of 2022, they also came up with a $15 billion stock buyback program over the next several years. So the 4.23, they're planning $15 billion with a B more in stock buybacks, which again is saying, hey, we've got no productive use for this. And I'm looking at this scenario going, I don't know how old those rail cars were, but they didn't look new. I got to wonder how long those bearings were running the rails that failed. Maybe it could have replaced those. I don't know. Instead of pushing for one-man crews, maybe have four or five people on the train. Maybe this gets seen faster. Maybe this, maybe. Because you clearly have the revenue to do this. You clearly have the revenue to make other choices, other decisions. You clearly have the ability to mitigate some of this stuff. by investing in infrastructure, investing in your train cars, investing in the human resource. You clearly have it. Because you're talking about, over the next several years, almost $20 billion in stock buybacks. That's not even the profits that they're sharing out. Now, I look at this, coming out with $1,000. This is brilliant PR. Brilliant. Now, the weird thing is when I say something about this, all the trolls seem to jump out. Well, you know, Joe Biden and the Democrats, you know, they screwed over the rail workers over those sick days. You remember. Except when you look at the vote, and Democrats put a vote in the House to give people those sick days, 207 Republicans voted against it. Or all of them. And this is one of those moments where you go, again, we give corporate America all this power. We give them all of this ability to control what happens to workers on the shop floor and to citizens in their communities. You know, I was thinking about as I was watching the coverage of this explosion in Bedford, Ohio, you know, I was remembering this plant in Texas that we visited, where the basketball hoops at the school were literally blown flat, 90 degree, right on the ground, just right down. The explosion was so great, knocked houses off of foundations, blew the whole back off of a high school, blew a nursing home, the roof completely off. You know, the massive amount of damage done from this explosion. But the company had absolute rights. Oh, it's their right. What about the rights of the others? And what we're seeing by Republican leaders across this country is a move to, well, we can't hold those companies responsible. I point to what's going on in Iowa. And Iowa, what the blank? What is going on in Iowa? There was a story over at FreightWaves, which is the trucking industry, the industry insider magazine. They had a story asking a simple question. Should there be laws protecting trucking companies from nuclear verdicts? So when a truck, you know, smashes into something or melts a bridge or whatever, you know, they want to be able to cap what they're calling non-economic damages at $1 million. So if you hit a busload of kids, okay, you know, there's the bus, there's the infrastructure, there's that. But, you know, all those people on the bus, the pain and suffering part of this and all of the life, $1 million tops. And there are places that already have this. They pointed out that Texas has added this layer of protection for trucking companies who are in post-crash litigation, as they put it. And what it does is it increases the standard for finding a trucking company liable for accidents and shifts the responsibility where? Onto the driver. So what they're doing is, again, they're shielding responsibility for the companies. And look, eventually we're going to hear, you know, those workers on the train, you know, they didn't, you're going to hear this, I think, at some point. But this is what happens. I mean, Florida is, I guess, doing the same kind of thing. But this idea that it's not the company's fault and they should be shielded from responsibility. And then going after, you know, it's going to be the truck driver's fault in any crashes. Not the fact that you've run this driver ragged, not the fact that you're pushing and pushing and pushing and knowing that you're pushing. This is one of those moments where we've got to ask ourselves, how far are we willing to protect corporate America at the expense of us? You know, I got to tell you, I think at some point we're going to see just how extreme Republicans are on the side of corporate interests, if it isn't bad enough already. But I'm looking at this Iowa legislation that they want to move through on. And it's House Study Bill 114, for anyone who wants to look it up. When will we hold them accountable? And how much are you willing to, well, put society at risk. Because understand, you know, it's like this derailment. Whatever the companies don't pick up, whatever external costs are, we're going to bear. And we're going to bear a bunch of this. It's not like, you know, they're going to bill these companies for all of the hours that people lose from work and all of the resources that are going into this and all of the economic and environmental damage. They're going to get out for pennies on the dollar. So when do we say enough of this? When do we go back to saying, you know what, we do need sane, rational regulations. We do need a cop on the beat. We need somebody overseeing this. We need people with a voice on the job. Just my thoughts. Want to hear yours. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on President's Day, yes, on President's Day, Republicans calling for civil war. Yeah, what a perfect day to do that. A U.S. president, our president, our commander-in-chief in Kiev on President's Day, in a war zone on President's Day, you have Republicans calling for a civil war. And backing a Russian dictator who invaded a sovereign nation. And this is the thing. I had this conversation with a friend today. Because we're about the same age. You know, we grew up during that era of the Cold War and grew up in, you know, mutual assured destruction. We grew up during that time of, you know, still having to dive under desks because they're going to drop the big one. You know, we're going to be lobbing nuclear weapons and the end of humanity and all of that. And, you know, he goes to me, he goes, I just can't fathom how it is that anyone our age or older would side with the Russians. I just don't get it. And I don't either, other than, you know, they hate the same people that they hate. It's that kind of, you know, we're on the same kind of fascistic page. But very weird, especially when the report came out today that evidently some leaked internal strategic documents from Putin's executive office, we're saying, look, he wants to take over Belarus. There's going to be they're getting the old gang back together, so to speak. So, you know, Ukraine is next. And then what happens? Well, then Poland. Yeah. And then what happens? What happens when they do attack a NATO country? The best outcome here is, and this is, I've had this argument with people. Look, I'm not a big war fan. I don't agree with us getting involved in every conflict around the world, but this one has real implications. If Ukraine goes down, there is a move. They're going to go to Poland. That it's just, I believe that to be the next step. And that's a NATO country. That means we get involved. That means we have to send our young men and women. We have to be into this. So the best possible outcome, Ukraine holds them off and we give them the things that they need to defend themselves. But it's just interesting to listen to the right scream and holler and you know, Marjorie Trainwreck, what's her name, going on about, we need a national divorce. You go, what? She tweeted, "We need a national divorce. We need to be separated by red states and blue states and shrink the federal government. Everyone I talk to says this." Everyone? From the sick and disgusting woke culture issues shoved down our throats to the Democrats' traitorous America Last policies. We're done. And, you know, this is one of those things that I've talked about before. Because understand, red states are welfare states. They take more money from the federal government than they contribute into the pot. Blue states are funding red states. I'm not calling for the end of the union. I'm not calling for tearing us apart. I would like to see a piece of legislation that says, you know, you don't get more than you put in, and that we then use that other money to, well, build our infrastructure and do things that we need to do. But you listen to these folks talk about, you know, this civil war idea. Now, she said, this isn't a civil war. It's a divorce. I'm going, really? Is that where the mind is? It's really twisted. But understand, we're not stronger torn apart. We're not stronger as a nation ripping ourselves asunder. We're stronger when we come together. And this is where, again, I love the MGT folks here who always, you know, all these people have bumper stickers saying, love it or leave it. Well, you know, Marjorie, you can gather the sheeple and get the flock out. You can go. No one's holding you here. If you don't like it, go. See how that works? It's pretty simple. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I wanted to comment. I have cousins because my family on the paternal side came from Poland. And I still have relatives, lots of relatives, actually, in Zakopane, where my family's from. And my cousins in Zakopane are very leery of what's going on right now with Russia. And they, too, believe that Putin wants to come after them next.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of experts, a lot of global experts who are going, look, this seems to be the pattern. They do want to get the old band back. This is something Putin has talked about in the past. There should be no surprise here. My problem is, you know, people our age and older, you know, we lived through the era of a Soviet bloc. I don't know that having that get back together is a great idea.
No, I don't believe so either. And there is a man named Konstantin. He is he's Russian, and he left Russia back in August. And he has a vlog on YouTube, and he had been saying before he left that he felt that this is what Putin was planning to do. And he also believes that Putin's lost his ever-loving mind. So, you know, the consensus seems to be from people that live in the area, you know, they're coming up with the same thing that us people over here are.
No, and the scarier part of this is, look, you know, once that happens, Russia has no chance. And the last chance, the only chance that they do have is to start throwing nukes. And that's where things get really ugly and dangerous. In this moment, you know, it's a ground war at this point. We start pushing buttons, it's all bad for everyone. So the best outcome, in my view, and look, I'm not an expert. I've read people who have, and this is others' opinions as well, is that Ukraine is able to stand up for themselves, turn this back, and stop this advancement, and let Russia figure out where they're going to go forward, but not allow Ukraine to fall.
I agree with you. And as for Marjorie Taylor Greene and her divorce, if that would happen, the same thing that happened during the first Civil War, the South, you know, all of a sudden they found out that they had all these economic disasters. But just think the money the blue states would save. Have a good evening.
Thanks so much, Alice. Appreciate it. No, we're in a weird spot because they're saying it on President's Day. I mean, this is the other part of this. We're taking this moment on President's Day to go, you know what? Isn't it amazing how much she's starting to feel her oats and say what the Q folk really believe? Because this is where we're going. know, the most extreme of the extreme. Let's deregulate everything. Let the rich and powerful take over. Let's not have any public programs or safety net. Or it's really kind of a very interesting future. One I don't know that I want my kids to have to be suffering through. But I do find it interesting that Marjorie and her cabal of crazy on President's Day.
The Shah one. Some sanity to the airwaves. The Shah 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. More wintry weather coming our way. Snow expected to start Tuesday night into Wednesday before warmer temperatures turn it back to rain for southern Wisconsin. As the storm moves west to east across the state, snowfall will continue through Thursday in the central and northern parts. Warmer weather later in the week will create the potential for freezing rain in central and southern Wisconsin. Tomorrow is primary election day. Voters casting ballots among four candidates for Wisconsin Supreme Court. The two top finishers move on to the April 4th general election. The eventual winner will determine whether conservatives keep the majority on the court or it flips 4-3 to liberal control for at least the next 2 years. The court upheld President Joe Biden's win in Wisconsin in 2020 by just one vote when conservative Brian Hagedorn sided with the liberal justices to confirm President Biden's win. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Monday morning at 8, don't miss Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring legendary Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Football, life, and fun.
Earl, you've been driving a Yugo. They just gave you a brand new Ferrari with turbo boost. So enjoy it, brother.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Monday morning at 8 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they are not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
Up hearing that women are bad with money, but I pay bills and take care of my family, so I'm pretty good with money. And now I'm taking control of my financial future by saving for retirement. Jumpstart your retirement savings at WeSaySaveIt.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hospitals must have staffing flexibility. In other words, cut nurses, raise profits.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So last week we talked about this Packers Sanitation Services Incorporated story about how, you know, again, we're making child labor great again. Moving back to the good old days when, you know, those kids with the really small hands could get into those small places and, you know, clean those blades for, you know, cutting the brisket and processing meat and doing the little hands do great work. And states like Iowa, what is going on in Iowa that are trying to make, you know, child labor great again? And again, this is what happens when you cut down on immigrant labor coming in. You need cheap exploitable labor somehow. Where are we going to get it? We're going to get it from the grade schools. Here to share some thoughts on that most recent story and where we're going as a country. I've asked Jordan Barab to come talk with us. Jordan's a favorite former acting assistant secretary and deputy assistant secretary of labor at OSHA during the Obama years. He's also one of my go-to guys on anything health and safety. His blog, jordanbarab.com/confined space, a must read. Jordan, thanks for taking time for us.
Glad to be here, Rick. Thanks for inviting me.
So I'm looking at this story, and, you know, we've seen a bunch of these recently coming, especially out of the meatpacking industry, where, you know, you've got these kids, you know, working the overnight shift, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old before they go into school in the morning. And now we're really trying to put this in the legislation in places like Iowa. This is a major step backwards that I don't think most people are paying as much attention to. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, according to some of the legislators in Iowa and some other states, the solution to child labor is more child labor. I think what we're seeing here is kind of a corporate response to the labor shortage, you know, that came out of COVID and people quitting jobs and, you know, organizing their workplaces. They're looking, as you said, for more vulnerable workers that they can underpay and who won't complain. And who's more vulnerable than a child? And especially when you look at PSSI, these were not just children. These were children of immigrants, many of whom didn't even speak English. So, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know, you know, how to complain. I mean, you can't get much more vulnerable than that population.
Yeah, isn't that the point, though? I mean, when you stop and look at it, you know, in fact, we've had J.D. Scholten, a state representative from Iowa, and Sammy Sheets, another rep from Iowa, on to talk about this legislation. And, you know, I had to say, look, you know, those aren't going to be my kids doing those jobs. Those are going to be poor and extremely poor working class kids, mostly going to be immigrants and people of color. Not going to be my kids or yours.
No, exactly. Yeah, our kids are going to do internships or, you know, babysit or, you know, work at grocery stores. I mean, there's, you know, work is good for kids. I worked when I was a kid, but I didn't work at dangerous jobs, and these kids shouldn't be working at dangerous jobs either. And the jobs, these PSSI jobs, these jobs cleaning the meatpacking plants, are the most dangerous jobs that exist in industry. You know, you're constantly seeing, I mean, grown-ups getting killed and maimed and limbs amputated in these jobs. It's just beyond belief that they would have kids working in these jobs.
Yeah, from the Department of Labor's report, it said children were working with hazardous chemicals and cleaning meat processing equipment, including back saws, brisket saws, and head splitters. You know, I got to be honest, I don't know that that's... that's not just getting a job for a little extra money to learn work ethic. That's real dangerous kind of work.
It's dangerous work. Yeah, it doesn't pay well, but obviously, you know, they need the money. I should say their families need the money. You know, it's not unlikely some of their families may be undocumented workers, and they aren't going to complain either that their children are being abused. They need the money. Again, these are exploitable, vulnerable kids.
Now, this is just the extreme. I've been talking about this for a while, that we're headed on a path to go back to the good old days of the Lochner era, where if you're hungry enough and desperate enough to work for poverty wages in deplorable conditions, that's your right, buddy. It's your liberty. It's your liberty to go out and put yourself in dangerous conditions for poverty wages. Only we're going to update it to freedom, because that's the new buzzword. Am I off base here? Because I got to tell you, everywhere I look, things not going the right direction in my view.
No, exactly. And, you know, I mean, things are getting worse. I mean, to the extent that, you know, you have many of these companies, they're subcontractors of the big companies. So the big companies are basically subcontracting out the responsibility for health and safety. They're subcontracting out, you know, any chance of getting a union. You know, this is what, you know, David Weil, who used to be head of wage and hour Department of Labor under the Obama administration, calls a fissured workplace. Nobody's actually working for the main company anymore. Everybody's working for a subcontractor or some kind of, you know, temporary firm or something like that. And that makes it, you know, very difficult these days for agencies like OSHA or for Wage and Hour to enforce the law, because you're basically enforcing 20th century laws in a 21st century workplace. They don't match. You know, the laws need to be updated. These agencies are terribly underfunded. They're tiny. You know, I mean, Wage and Hour's budget is something like $250 million. I mean, OSHA's is only about $600 and $700 million. These are tiny, tiny budgets for the federal government, for these agencies that have responsibility for working conditions and fair wages and safety conditions all over the country, for every workplace in the country. It's absurd.
No, it's interesting, as I've had a couple people reach out to me and say there's some grand conspiracy, some nefarious plot. You know, the end times are near, because, look, we had an explosion. There's an explosion today in Bedford, Ohio. There was another explosion over the weekend at ArcelorMittal there in the Warren Coke plant. You've got the thing going on in East Palestine. All of this, it's all, and I'm going, no, this isn't some nefarious plot. This is what deregulation gets us. This is what corporate America policing themselves get us. And just because we're now paying attention doesn't mean this is new. You know as well as anyone, this stuff happens quite frequently. It just never rises to the level that we pay attention.
Exactly. Unless a whole lot of workers are killed at one time or a whole community is poisoned, nobody pays much attention to it, and nothing changes. It's only when there's a major catastrophe, you know, really, that there's potential for change in these agencies' budgets and these agencies' laws. So, you know, we hope something, you know, good can come out of that. We've seen the right wing, you know, going after Biden for this and going after Pete Buttigieg and that type of thing. I'd like to see them, if they really want to do something, all the MAGA people, you know, get in line and, you know, support higher budgets for EPA, higher budgets for OSHA, for Wage and Hour, and strengthening the regulations and updating the laws.
And actually putting some teeth in the laws, not just EPA, OSHA, but also the National Labor Relations Board. There should be some actual penalties when you break the law. And I'm looking at what Norfolk Southern is doing right now. They're going around and said, hey, we're going to give everybody in the zip code $1,000. Look how wonderful we are doing this self-imposed fine thing. And you find out there's only like 8,000 people in the entire zip code. So it's not really costing them anything, but it is a great PR stunt.
Yeah, and I mean, PSSI only got fined $1.5 million for this whole child labor thing. And this is PSSI is owned by Blackstone, which is a huge, you know, company, a huge, you know, limited equity firm. And you know, it doesn't even make a dent. The same with any kind of OSHA fines, hardly even make a dent, you know, in the budgets, bottom lines of large companies.
Yeah, we talked about this last week, about, you know, how paltry these fines are. I think it was like $15,000 for each one of these violations. And you brought up a moment ago that, you know, these third-party logistics companies and these headhunters, these staffing services, you know, these are folks who I think a lot of this stuff actually gets made able to have happen. Because, well, it's not our fault that the company sent us these people. Because I was looking at the numbers of this PSSI group. There were three places that had like 22, 26, and 27 workers in it. And you go, that's not an accident. That's an on purpose. Those somebody, there's a headhunter out there bringing those kids, recruiting those kids to go into that factory. Maybe one or two you can get away with going, oh, we didn't know. But when you got 22, 26, or 27, that was planned, that was schemed. They did that on purpose.
Yeah, and you've got these huge companies like JBS and Cargill who are, you know, shocked that this is going on, you know, in their plants. And even PSSI is shocked. You know, they can't believe that, you know, they're actually doing this. And yet they, you know, they did everything they could not to cooperate with Wage and Hour. But nevertheless, you know, they allegedly had no idea this was going on.
Yeah. So what's the answer, Jordan? I mean, you know, going forward, there's a lot of problems out here. You know, as I've been focusing on the fact that, you know, we have very different views politically. My friends on the right believe there should be no regulations. Let the corporations police themselves because they're going to act in their best interest. I see that as a failed ideology. I'm curious where you find yourself on that thought.
Well, as you say, Rick, I mean, this is what capitalism is. I mean, corporations obviously want to maximize their profits, and that's the way the system works. And, you know, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. But to go along with that, you need regulation. You need a government presence there to actually control what would otherwise be just uncontrolled exploitation of the workforce and of consumers, for that matter. So you need, as I mentioned before, you need to modernize the laws. Now, that's obviously not going to happen too soon, the way our political situation is. You need to increase agency funding. As I said, these agencies are tiny. You need to mandate corporate responsibility. And what I mean by that is that the big companies need to be also responsible for the crimes of their subcontractors. And the temporary firms need to also be responsible, you know, for the host employers and vice versa. Now, OSHA's been doing some of that and holding both sides responsible, but it's really hard when you have these subcontracting, you know, arrangements. You can't really hold the companies at the top vulnerable with the laws that we have right now. But probably more important, you really need to educate and empower these vulnerable workers. OSHA has this very small, but has a grant program where they're training, unions and other worker organizations who actually have access to these workers, because OSHA can't reach these workers, but, you know, churches and other organizations can reach these workers. So they need to be trained, they need to be empowered, they need to understand what the hazards are, how to complain about them, and they need to be protected, especially if they're undocumented, because even undocumented workers legally deserve the same protection that documented workers do. And finally, of course, you need more unions in these places. I mean, the whole process of subcontracting and everything, you know, one of the reasons for that is to get rid of unions. The main company may be unionized, but, you know, they don't want to unionize the people that are actually cleaning the place, because, you know, they don't have to pay them well. They don't have to take care of their health and safety. They get away with a hell of a lot. If parts of their plan, especially the most dangerous parts of the work in these places, are not unionized.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing is, since you brought that up, is, you know, I have a friend who was one of these headhunters, worked for a staffing agency, and he said it was interesting how they would ask for people to come in, and then almost immediately they were put into the most dangerous jobs because they weren't their employees. They were just people that they churned through. And this is, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I can't imagine how much worse it's gotten.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing, Rick, I mean, you mentioned this at the beginning, but, you know, there are not thousands, but probably millions of workers just over the border or even in this country that are still undocumented that would love to have these jobs. We don't really have a labor. We don't need to have a labor shortage here if we don't want a labor shortage. There's plenty of workers out there that will do these jobs, ideally, you know, for better wages and better benefits and more protections. But, this whole idea there's a labor shortage when we could have a reasonable immigration system is just ridiculous.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show here with Jordan Barab, former acting assistant secretary and deputy assistant secretary of labor for OSHA during the Obama years. He's also the my go-to guy on health and safety stuff. Check out his website, jordanbarab.com/confined space. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. Now, I want to get some of your thoughts on what we saw happen out in East Palestine. We find out that these trains are getting bigger, they're heavier, the load distributions are different, they want fewer people on the trains. It just seems like all of the push to not regulate them, to not make them change, to not make them spend the billions and billions of dollars they're spending on stock buybacks and enriching themselves hasn't filtered down to safety. Is this a moment where we hold someone accountable, or is this just another one of those moments where it's in the news for a couple of days? Once the flames go down, we forget about it until the next time. I'm curious how you see this playing out.
Well, I think that's something, you know, we need to make sure it isn't forgotten. No, you're right. I mean, this is, you know, we started to look at this problem, you know, during the labor issues, you know, in the fall when there was almost a strike with railroad workers. And you have this new phenomenon, which you kind of mentioned, which is called, you know, precision scheduled railroading, where they're trying to cut costs everywhere. Now, in the fall, we focused on the fact that precision scheduled railroading, you know, didn't allow for any kind of sick leave time for workers. And everybody said, oh, that's too bad, but we can't have a strike. Well, the thing with precision scheduled railroading is it not only cuts back on workers, you know, time off and on sick leave, it also cuts back on maintenance. It makes for longer trains, as you said. One-man train crews, that's what the railroads would like to have. One man, and ultimately, they probably want nobody on the train. They'd like no staff. They'd like it completely automated, which is absurd when you have these trains that are 1.5 and 2 miles long. First of all, to have one person on these trains, you know, the bearings on this train, you know, who knows how far back started burning. That's supposedly, you know, what led to the thing in East Palestine. I mean, what do? You're an engineer. You're the only one on the train. You stop the train and walk back for a mile and a half to see what's going on. If you talk to any railroaders these days, they aren't surprised that this happened. They're surprised that it hadn't happened yet and that it wasn't worse. And we saw a lot worse. You may remember almost 10 years ago in Lac-Mégantic in Canada, when a train, again, a very poorly maintained train, only one person on it, the train stalled on a hill. They told the guy to go to a hotel. They'd fix it. The train caught fire. The brakes let loose. It came rolling down into this town of Lac-Mégantic at a huge speed, carrying all kinds of crude oil, derailed, crashed, exploded, and killed 47 people in that town, destroyed the whole downtown. I mean, that's the kind of thing we're going to be looking at more and more now with this precision scheduled railroading and constantly cutting back on maintenance, making the trains longer and cutting back on staff.
Yeah, and but again, you look at this, and this is another example of what we've done, allowed to have happen across industry, this mass consolidation where I understand, you know, in the 80s, there were upwards of 40 different train companies. Now we got six.
Yeah.
You know, with this kind of consolidation, this kind of enormous amount of profit that they then use to spin into lobbying operations to push back on any regulations or any changes, they seem to hold all the cards because we're told. And again, I have my conservative friends who tell me all the time, they're going to do what's in their best interest. So they don't want these kind of disasters because they don't want to have to spend the money. So they're going to do the right thing. And I'm going, I don't buy that on any level.
No. And we saw the hazmat railroad regulations weakened somewhat during the Obama administration, even, and then Trump, of course, just eliminated them. So the requirement for better brakes where you have hazmat on these cars, better hazmat cars on every car that's carrying hazmat, all of that basically went away. So you've got not only not stronger regulations, which you need, especially with this precision scheduled railroading, but you actually have weaker regulations than we should be having anyway. It's going totally in the wrong direction. And it's going to lead to more and more of these disasters and worse ones.
Yeah. Last question I've got for you, last line of questioning, because, you know, we're looking at the response and all I keep hearing. And look, I give Republicans credit in this moment because they're putting all the blame on Pete Buttigieg. They're putting all the blame on Joe Biden. All the blame's on the government response to this. And it seems like Norfolk Southern's getting kind of away with what happened. You know, they're going to give out $1,000 to every resident in the zip code. So look at how wonderful they are. What is your assessment of the government response to what we saw? I mean, you're someone who's worked inside of government. You know how the sausage is made and the wheels turn. What are your thoughts of how the response went?
Well, I mean, I think the response is going probably as well as it can. I mean, what happens in these situations is once the incident happens, then EPA is in charge with response, cleaning things up, testing the air, testing the water, and they were right in there doing that. It's the NTSB in this case to investigate the causes, and they're right in there doing it. Buttigieg has been getting all the blame on this, but in one sense, once the incident has happened, there's nothing they can do. Their job is to keep things from happening in the first place, and obviously, it's not just it's Congress and also allowing the laws and the agency able to issue regulations. But on the other hand, I mean, this does call. I mean, There's the phrase, never let a good catastrophe go to waste, right? This is a moment where you can look at corporate responsibility, you can look at the lack of government regulation, the lack of funding for the enforcement agencies, and do something about it. And what I see lacking here is some kind of leadership there pointing us in that direction, taking advantage of this catastrophe, if you will. And that could have been something, for example, the president could have been doing. It certainly could have been something Buttigieg could have been doing, even if he didn't necessarily have a responsibility in the specific response. Instead, we're kind of letting the right wing take over this, which is bad because they don't have any solutions. Their only solution to this whole thing is to fire Buttigieg. They're not talking about increasing regulations, increasing EPA's budget, making tighter regulations for rail safety, all that. I mean, ask them what their solutions are. You won't hear anything except fire Buttigieg and impeach Biden.
Yeah, it's all about the division. It's all about the distraction. Whereas we should be looking at how do we make sure this doesn't happen again to another community. And end it right here. But again, this is where we are politically in these polar camps, and all we do is lob bombs at each other. But Jordan, I appreciate the time as always. Hope folks will take a look at your website, jordanbarab.com/confined space. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. Highly suggested. Jordan, appreciate the time, man.
All right. Thanks for inviting me, Rick.
Look forward to talking to you again. Again, jordanbarab.com/confined space. Going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day the National Lawyers Guild held their first convention in the nation's capital. The guild was established as a way to bring together progressive lawyers dedicated to fighting for basic and progressive change in our political and economic system and to assure that human rights be regarded as more sacred than property interests. Members were admitted regardless of race, sex, or political beliefs. The early guild stood up for FDR's New Deal reforms like a full Social Security program against the staunch opposition of the American Bar Association. From its inception, protecting the rights of working people has been an important effort for the guild. At the first convention, they passed a resolution supporting the rights of working people to organize and collectively bargain. Guild lawyers supported the founding of both the United Auto Workers and the Congress of Industrial Organizations. They also stood up for civil rights, adopting an anti-lynching resolution at their first convention. During the civil rights era, they provided legal aid for activists and fought for voting rights. This made them a target during the 1950s Cold War anti-communist hysteria. The FBI targeted the Guild for investigation. By 1955, the Guild had dropped to just 500 members. In the 1970s, the Guild successfully sued to find out the extent of FBI spying. They discovered that 1,000 informants had generated FBI files of 400,000 pages on the Guild and its members. Despite this harassment, the Guild has kept up its fight for working people. The organization has opposed anti-worker legislation from Taft-Hartley to the passage of NAFTA. In 2012, the Guild celebrated its 75th anniversary stronger than ever.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So get ready for the next conspiracy theory. Get ready for it. It's coming. The Q folk are already out spinning the next yarn. the greatest thing, someone emailed me and sent me the greatest response to the Q folks. It's basically hillbilly Scientology. So, coming out of the hillbilly Scientology brigade, the balloon, the big balloon, the big Chinese spy balloon. What if the big balloon that was hovering over Montana, secret stuff, what if that balloon wasn't a Chinese balloon after all? Oh no. What if it was Joe Biden and Hunter Biden? What if it was the Bidens? What if it was a super secret, super duper secret executive order? They are that crazy. One of the theories that's being thrown out there is that this was Biden, because they said this group Human Events, it's a right wing publication. They wrote that one theory is that Biden is bought and paid for by communist Chinese. While it's true that Biden and the other officials are certainly compromised by the Chinese, what if the balloon had nothing to do with China? What if the Chinese spy balloon was actually a U.S. spy balloon? What if the administration's insistence that it was Chinese was actually a convenient narrative to hide an almost even more alarming secret? Joe Biden spying on you. Oh my gosh. Yeah, this is coming. It is coming. There, I guarantee you, Marjorie Three Names and the rest of them, there will be a hearing when they start doing their traveling road shows. It's coming. It is coming. Now, what's interesting is, again, while Marjorie Three Names is calling for a divorce, the country to divorce, it's interesting that whenever something bad happens, who do they turn to? They turn to the federal government. Now, I also find it interesting that you've get, these Republican representatives like this Randy Feenstra, Iowa's 4th Congressional District Representative, who tweeted out that American families continue to suffer from President Biden's wasteful spending. by flooding our economy with $6 trillion, he fueled record inflation and caused paychecks to shrink. Under Speaker McCarthy's leadership, we'll restore fiscal responsibility in Congress. Now understand, the money hasn't already been spent yet. So this idea that we've spent all this money hasn't been spent yet. And this money that hasn't been spent yet is somehow contributing to inflation is just lunacy. And I find it amazing, utterly amazing, that cutting taxes massively for the very wealthy and for big corporations, you know, adding to our debt, was good. I find that extremely hard to believe that that's good, by giving rich people more and corporate America more while taking from the working class.